Scoliosis is when the spine curves sideways and, if untreated, can cause issues with pain, mobility, and balance, even breathing. So early diagnosis is important. Next, what you need to know about scoliosis with Dr. Ashish Patel, spine surgeon and department chair of spine surgery at Dooley Health and Care. This is Dooley Noted, a health and care podcast from Dooley Health and Care. I'm Amanda Wild, and welcome, Dr. Patel. It's great to have you here.
Amanda, thank you for having me. Excited to talk about a topic that I'm very passionate about.
Well, first, can you give a general overview of scoliosis? I think it is a word we've heard, but I don't know that we really know what it is and how common it is.
Sure. And scoliosis is really used as a term to describe a curvature in the spine. And spine is not straight when looking at a person from the side. But when you look at somebody from the front, usually the spine is straight. And in a small subset of the population, the spine actually becomes curved. The main form of scoliosis is those that affect the pediatric population. And that's known as adolescent idiopathic scoliosis. Usually happens in the child during their growth spurt and affects about 2 to 3% of the population. The idiopathic in that term means that we still don't fully understand why it happens, although genetics does play a role. Now, for adult patients, it's slightly different. It primarily occurs because of the asymmetric disc collapse. It starts small, and then it gets bigger. It's part of the degenerative cascade or the wear and tear that happens on our body. And that occurs in a much higher percentage of people, about 50 to 60% of adults over the age of 70. Most commonly, again, from just the wear and tear that happens through life on the spine.
So scoliosis can occur anytime through life, but mostly we're noticing it in younger patients and then patients over 70.
Yes, that's correct.
Are there typical signs and symptoms we may notice?
Sure. And again, there's a difference between whether it's affecting a pediatric patient or an adult patient. In the pediatric population, sometimes you can develop mild pain in the shoulder blade area most commonly. And in severe cases, you can get a rib asymmetry or rib hump, sometimes a waist crease because their spine is a little shifted. And so one side of their waist may seem like there's a dimple or indent in there. You can also have differences in shoulder height where one side is drooping and one side is elevating. However, most pediatric patients that have scoliosis are totally asymptomatic. They're running around, they're very active, they don't really notice anything is really wrong with them. The only way that you kind of notice something is that these like small deviations in the anatomy or the way that they look. And that can be subtle sometimes to pick up. Now in the adult patient, these are 60, 70 year olds, and usually they come to my office because they have pretty bad low back pain and they've tried treating it with anti-inflammatories or some physical therapy, but it's really the back pain that drives them to come see us. And sometimes that back pain is associated with leg pain as well, like a sciatica that shoots down their leg.
And I think what I'm hearing too is we don't always know what causes scoliosis in children, but we have a better sense of what causes it in older people. So does that change the way we might treat it?
Most of the times for a peds patient, what we're trying to do is control the curve from getting worse because, you know, they're asymptomatic. They don't really have any pain. They don't really have any limitations that way. But as the curves get worse, it can affect their balance, their breathing, like you mentioned. And so the treatment is really focused around preventing the curve from getting worse, catching it early, and preventing it from getting worse. And then for the adult patients, the treatment is less about the curve progression. They're more focused on trying to treat their back pain and trying to relieve some of the nerve compression that's in their leg.
Now, I recall being in elementary school, and nurses came in one day and had us lean over and checked every child's spine. And that's how one classmate was diagnosed with this. As you said, no symptoms. So how is scoliosis in children diagnosed? You mentioned symptoms may be getting worse, but who might first notice this in a child?
Looking back at school screening initiatives, and that was pretty national, where there'd be a nurse, a school nurse, that would check everybody's back. And this was instituted nationally as an effort to try to catch scoliosis earlier. Now, at this stage, it's less common to have school screenings. They still occur in some areas, but what we found is that there were a lot of referrals going to the spine doctor, and in fact, the children never really had a scoliosis that was present. And so what we say is that there was a very high false positive rate. And so a lot of concern with the family, like, oh, we may have scoliosis. And so it generates unnecessary concern sometimes. We still want to catch it early, but we don't want to overwhelm the system by sending more people than is necessary to get checked out or get x-rays. So we really rely on the pediatric doctor that does an annual physical each year and the family members. And so that's why awareness is very important when we talk about this. And primarily what they're looking for is a shift in the way that their rib cage looks, the way that when they bend over, if you see any asymmetries, like one side is higher than the other, that's truly what we're looking for. And the burden of that and finding that is on family members and the pediatric physician that takes care of the child.
And is there a particular age range that parents and doctors should be most vigilant about monitoring their children's posture for signs of scoliosis?
Absolutely. It's primarily during the adolescent growth spurt. So that occurs differently for males and females, usually for females around the ages of 10 to 14. And for males, around 12 to 16. And those are the years of life that we pay extra special attention to this.
What are the different options available to treat scoliosis in children? You said you want to prevent that curve from getting worse. What methods are there to address that?
Let's say once a child has had some sort of indication that they may have scoliosis, they usually then get referred to a spine doctor's office. We confirm the diagnosis by taking an x-ray of them standing from the frontal plane, so looking at them from the front, and the x-ray is called a scoliosis x-ray, which is from the head down to the pelvis. And there we can see if there is, in fact, a curvature or not. For small curves, which is the majority of curves that we see, we measure these in degrees, how much curvature there is. So most children with scoliosis have a curve size of around 10 to 20 degrees. We think of that as a mild curve. They're completely normal, running around, don't even notice that anything is going on. In fact, you probably wouldn't even be able to appreciate a small curve like that. Their friends or anybody wouldn't be able to tell. Now, for those children, we just watch them. We'll probably have them come back for a repeat x-ray if they're still growing in 6 to 12 months. And maybe we prescribe them physical therapy for stretching and strengthening if they do have some mild pain that's associated with it. As these curve sizes start to increase, and we see curves of greater than 20 or 25 degrees in a growing child, we'll probably brace them. Bracing can be very, very effective at preventing the curve progression if the brace is worn most of the day, and I'm talking about 20 out of the 24 hours a day. If you don't wear the brace, they become ineffective. And so we really stress to the child and the family about proper brace wearing for the number of hours that is necessary to control the curve. Now, braces are great in combination with physical therapy, specifically Schroth physical therapy for scoliosis of curve sizes between 25 degrees to 45 degrees. Now, when the curves get larger than that, 45, 50 degrees, then we're talking about possibly surgery. And that's really only for curves that have become severe and very progressive, or if they become very painful.
And you do this sort of surgery. Can you give an overview of what's involved? Do you straighten the spine in some way?
Yes. So back in the 1950s and 1960s, when we had limited technology and instrumentation to treat these, the primary objective of the surgery was, okay, there's a big curve that's developing. Let's just do a surgery so we can stop the curve from getting worse. And if the curve stopped getting worse, the surgery was a success. Well, fast forward 60, 70 years, and the modern instrumentation that we have now can not only halt the progression of the curve, but we can get tremendous correction of the curve, around 60 to 70% reduction in the curve size. So if somebody had a curve size of 50, 60, 70 degrees, we can bring that all the way down to 15 degrees, 20 degrees, and get them almost straight. Not perfectly straight, but almost straight. And thankfully, we can also combine our modern day instrumentation with modern day neuromonitoring, like that's during an operation where we make sure that the signals from the brain and spinal cord are working properly during an operation, with modern day spinal navigation or robotic surgery, where we can make sure that when we place these instrumentation, it can be in a very safe way. And so the combination of all these new technologies these days makes the surgery very, very safe and very, very effective at correcting the curves.
So when do you decide whether pain management is the focus, especially for adults, I'm thinking here, and when surgery should be considered?
So if a patient is very functional and they're walking well and their pain is mild to moderate, I would say pain management and exercises is going to be the primary way that we treat them. You know, every adult, especially these days, the population has grown older and people want to be active even through their older years. And so we want to try to encourage that and help adults maintain their function. So mild to moderate cases can be treated with strengthening exercises, especially for the core and low back, and pain management, whether that's anti-inflammatories over the counter, some patches, some chiropractic work, or even some injections at specific places if there are pain generators that are coming from their lower back. Mostly the pain would be from an arthritis type picture. Now, if these issues become severe enough and a patient sees a big decline in their function and the pain becomes excessive and these over-the-counter or prescription medications don't really help control the pain, that's when we start to consider more of a surgical option.
You mentioned some lifestyle modifications like exercises and some medications that can help manage scoliosis pain in adults. Are there any other lifestyle modifications we can make as adults?
So if you think about the spine as a joint in your body, much like a knee or a hip, you know that the spine is undergoing loading. And that just means the weight of your body gets focused on the spine, especially at the bottom of the spine. And that's where most of the curves develop in adults, at the lower area of the spine called the lumbar spine. And so through life, you're constantly moving, bending, extending, reaching, twisting. And so these discs that help you do that undergo a lot of wear and tear. So much like other orthopedic issues like the knees and the hips, in a preventative manner, what we stress is mobility work, and so that's under stretching, and we stress strengthening, developing the muscles around those joints so that the muscles can take the brunt of the loading and offload the work that's necessary that the joints or the spinal discs have to endure. So stretching and strengthening is a key component to lifestyle modifications or preventative care. The other component is mass or loading. So if you can stay trim, an ideal weight for your height, that's another way that you can create lifestyle modifications for preventative care.
After all we've talked about, I have renewed admiration for all the spine does for us. It's moving all the time. If you're using your spine correctly, is there such a thing as overuse?
I always stress movement and doing all the things that you love to do. But you can imagine that the spine undergoes wear and tear, most commonly in people who use their spine the most. And so there is a way to use the spine correctly. For example, like when you reach to go get something, we kind of tell people to bend their knees and flex down from their waist to try to keep their spine reasonably straight. Of course, the spine curves, but reasonably straight so that you're using and sharing the load, not just on the spine to pick something up, but you're sharing it through the hips and the knees in order to pick something heavy up. So there is a correct way to use your spine, especially when it comes to more involved activities like bending, lifting, and twisting.
So you really have to have awareness of using your spine correctly. So we're told move it or lose it, but at the same time, you have to move correctly. And also the stretching, I think, that you mentioned and strengthening also gives your spine some support as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I feel that a lot of people have the stretching component down. Most people that I see in the office are in a stretching program or have started a stretching program, and they get lots of benefit from a stretching program. But what I always have to encourage them to do in addition to stretching is the strengthening. That happens less commonly, occurs to people less commonly, but a strong core and a strong low back is of primary importance in order to improve the longevity of the spine and the other joints in the body.
You mentioned encouraging your patients. Do you have any closing advice or words of encouragement for anyone who may be living with scoliosis?
Scoliosis is that common that, in fact, most people don't even know that they have it. But they're functional, very mild pain. And so people that are living with scoliosis typically don't even know that they have it. But for those that do have it and are aware of it, and maybe are affected by it more, we have many treatment options before you would even consider something as interventional as surgery. We have therapists at Dooley, trainers, and all types of doctors that are at hand to help care for somebody and educate them about their curve. We promote exercise and preventative approaches first before we consider anything like injections or surgery. And should you have any questions or even concerns about a curve because you have a curve or you've been told that you have a curve or you're seeing that your body shape is changing, then please don't hesitate to see our scoliosis experts, Dr. Tony Ranella, Islam Al-Baghdadi, and myself, and our awesome physician assistant team are there to help with an evaluation and provide advice.
Thank you so much for being there and for this clarity that you've given on this comprehensive view of scoliosis and what can be done about it and educating us on how we use our spine. Thank you so much, Dr. Patel.
You're welcome.
That was Dr. Ashish Patel, spine surgeon and department chair of spine surgery at Dooley Health and Care. For more information, visit DooleyHealthandCare.com. And if you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and check out our full podcast library for additional topics of interest. This is Dooley Noted, a health and care podcast from Dooley Health and Care.